Prenatal vitamins should be started ideally before you become pregnant. But if you are just finding out that you are expecting, haven't started one yet, or are just learning your prenatal vitamins are not providing the nutrients you thought they were, it's not too late to start or switch. Needed's prenatal vitamins are packed with the vitamins, minerals, and botanicals needed for complete, comprehensive nourishment for both you and your current or future baby. Needed is amazing and are offering our listeners 20% off with code VBAC20. So you can get your prenatal vitamin and so much more at thisisneeded.com. And don't forget to type in code VBAC20 for 20% off.
Hello, everybody. I am so tickled to have our friend Paige from Northern Colorado. She is one of our own family members, midwives. And we are going to be having Lily. If you guys have been writing on Instagram, you know Lily probably by now. And she's going to be expecting here in just a few months to have a VBAC. And she hired a midwife. Her name is Paige. And we are going to be talking to her today about midwifery care and out of hospital and so many amazing things. Paige is a certified nurse midwife, like I said, in Northern Colorado. She works at a small midwife-owned practice and catches babies in the hospital setting, which is really unique, at least here in Utah. We either have a hospital midwife, CNM, and they catch babies in hospital, or we have CNMs or CPMs out of hospital for birth center births, and they usually do not go to the hospital setting. So she's going to talk more about this, and I just think it's awesome. I hope that we can keep having that happen, you know, more and more around the world. Her work philosophy for birth is a natural process that occasionally needs medical intervention, not a medical process that occasionally occurs naturally. Oh, you guys, when she said that, I loved it so much that I even repeated it. So if you want to hear that again, go listen to this episode because you're going to hear it again. She says she strives to support her clients in a holistic way and change the current climate around hospital birth. You guys, I absolutely loved this conversation with her. So I am going to turn it over to the episode so we can hear from our friend Paige.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Welcome. Tell us more about you, Paige.
Yeah. So I'm a certified nurse midwife. I work in Northern Colorado in Fort Collins at a woman's place. We're a small midwifery owned practice. Right now there's just 2 CNMs. That's the whole practice. It's just me and my colleague, Jess, who owns it, which is really cool because we kind of get to push the boundaries because we're not really locked into the hospital system. We're able to catch babies there, but we're not actually employed through the bigger hospital systems, which is nice because when we don't have that physician oversight and stuff like that, I think we're able to do a lot more and kind of honor that midwifery care model, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people feel locked in the policies and they're overseeing physician and things like that. But when it's just 2 midwives, we really get to do what we want and what feels like best for the patient kind of thing. Yeah. So I think that was a big thing when I first got like into the certified nurse midwifery world. I was like, where do I want to work? I had offers from bigger hospital systems and it just didn't feel like the right fit. So working at a small privately owned practice felt like the right answer for me, at least, so that I was able to practice in a way that I felt was right by people. I just didn't want to be locked in by policy and by physicians and stuff like that. I just wanted to grow with other midwives. So,
yes, I love that so much. And I know it, I don't know, maybe I should say, I know it feels to me, I don't know it as like an actual fact, but that feels like a unique situation and a unique setup to me. We don't really have that I know of here in Utah. We either have out of hospital, CPMs, or we have in hospital CNMs that are just hospital. And I know that one hospital system is trying to do like the attached birth center, but
Yeah.
there's still the, it's very different still. There's still the hospital, umbrella midwives, I guess I could say. So is that unique, or is it just something that really fills it?
I think it's unique because where I came from in Florida, if you were a CNM, you 100% practice in the hospital, which we do, but it was you were owned by a larger group of physicians, essentially. Florida was working towards independent practice when I was there. Colorado is an independent practice state for nurse practitioners, which is really
Awesome.
cool because we don't have to have that oversight. And I don't know if Florida ever got there, but I know it varies state to state on if you have to be overseen by a physician or not. And honestly, that's why a lot of people, when they're ready to become a midwife, if they don't have independent practice rights as a CNM, even if they're already a nurse, they'll go for the CPM, which is the professional midwife, because they actually have more like autonomy to do what they want outside of the hospital because they're not bound in by all those laws and stipulations, which is interesting.
Exactly. And I think that's a big, the CPM, CNM, that's a big thing when people are looking for midwives. Do you have any suggestions about that? Like CNM versus CPM, are VBACs, if a VBAC mom is looking at a CPM, is that a safe and reasonable option?
Absolutely. Yes. I think CPMs and CNMs are both reasonable, safe options. They both have training in that. They both can like honor your holistic journey. I would say the biggest thing is who you feel most connected to. Because I think trusting your team, you'll have people who've had the worst birthing outcomes, horrible stories, but they're like, but I look back on it and I felt so good about it because I trusted my team. And I think that's what's important. So if a CPM just seems like your person and that's who you're going to trust, then that's what you should go for. Whereas a CNM, if that seems like your person who you trust, I think that would be a good route too. I think there's a lot of people think, oh, they do home births, they must catch babies in a barn, and there's no regulation, you know. Even sometimes when I say midwife, people are like, what? Oh, do you dress like a nun and catch babies out in a barn? I'm like, no.
Yes, this
And
is real though. These are real
yes.
thoughts. And not to make, if you were listening, and not to make fun of you if you think this, but this is a real thing. There is a myth surrounding midwifery care, especially out of hospital midwives, where they just, I don't know what, a lot of people think a lot of different things.
Absolutely.
And yeah, like I think it was a chicken chaser or something that a dad, it's like, do you chase chickens? And I was like, what? And he's like, well, that's what the midwives do. So I figured the doulas do. I'm like, what? No, we don't chase chickens.
Like so old school thinking, but realistically, midwives started in the home and that was like their history. It's cool that they've been able to step into the hospital and kind of bring some of that back into the hospital because I think it's needed.
It is, yeah.
And we are seeing, I think, even some physicians, like the newer physicians, are starting to be a little bit more holistic and see things in a whole picture. But I'm glad that the midwives did step into the hospital because I think that needed to be there. But I'm so glad people are still doing it at home because I think that's such a good option for so many people.
Yeah. So talking about the midwives in the hospital, a lot of people are being told that they're kind of overseen by the OBs. Is this common? Does this happen where you're at? I mean, you kind of said you're separated, but do the hospital midwives in your area or most areas, are they always overseen by OBs
Not
or?
necessarily. It would vary state to state and hospital to hospital. We actually just got privileges, admitting privileges, a couple of years ago. Actually, my boss, Jess, who owns the practice where I work, she had worked in Denver where they were allowed to admit their patients, everything. They didn't have to have any physician oversight. But when she was there, she had to have physician oversight. And she's like, well, why? It's an hour drive north. Why would that make a difference? Same hospital system. So she fought when she bought the practice and the physician who owned it prior left. She was alone and she had to have that physician oversight. So she fought for independent practice privileges and she got it. And some of the midwives at first weren't so happy about it because they kind of liked being overseen by the doctor and somebody signing off all of their things. And some of the midwives were like, finally, like we should be able to practice independently. We're in the state of Colorado. So it's going to vary each place. But I think it's a good question to ask, like, if something's going wrong, will a physician just come unannounced into my room in the hospital? And that's not the case with ours. We have to invite them in. And if we're inviting them in, we've probably had a conversation, you know what I mean, multiple times. And we're like,
With the
okay, we
patient.
think we need to have this. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. For the patients that do have the oversight of the OPs, do you have any suggestions? I feel like sometimes, at least here in Utah and my own doula clients, when we have that situation, it can get a little confusing and hard when we've got an OB over here saying one thing, but then we've got a midwife maybe saying another, for instance, a VBAC candidate, like, oh, you really have a lower chance of having VBAC. I'll support it. I'll sign off, but you have a really low chance. But then the midwife's like, don't worry about that. You actually have a great chance. This is totally possible. It gets confusing.
Yeah. And it's like, who do you trust in that scenario?
Yeah.
And I think that's where evidence comes in, because I think midwives and physicians, they both practice evidence-based, but some people may have newer evidence than others. I've worked with OBs who probably roll over in their grave when I say certain things because it wasn't the old way, but it is the new way. So it's really, I think if somebody can come in with their own evidence and they're like, look, I've looked into this and I think I'm a good candidate because XYZ, I think physicians respond well to that because they're like, okay, they've done their research and like maybe I need to do some research. And then when they
Yes.
have that thought, then they know, okay, this is a well-educated person and I can't just say whatever I want and they're going to take my word as, the Holy Bible.
Yeah. No, really, exactly. I mean, it always comes down to education, and the more information we can have, in our tool belt or in our toolbox, whatever it may be, it's powerful. So I love that you point that out. And I think it's also important to note that if you do have two providers kind of saying different things, that it's okay to ask for that evidence. Hey, you had mentioned this. Can you tell me where you got that from or why you were saying that? And then you can discuss that with your other provider.
Yeah, and following intuition too. I think, you can have all the evidence in the world, but what is your gut telling you too? Who do you trust more and what feels right in your body in that moment? I think we're all experts of our own bodies and, there's a lot that goes into a VBAC and stuff like that. And it's more than just like the evidence too. I think people have to feel mentally and like physically ready for it too. And I wish more people kind of focused sometimes on the mental and spiritual aspect of it. Because I think a lot of people get ready physically, but maybe mentally they weren't like prepared for the emotional like switch there.
Totally. Thinking about that page, or not page, oh my gosh, looking at you, Lily. I mean, Lily, tell us a little bit of why you kind of went the midwifery route. I know you kind of had, you really wanted to find the right provider.
Yeah, so I think for me, I have always been drawn to midwifery care. I was a little bit of a birth nerd prior to even working for the VBAC Link or even having my own kiddos. And with my first son, prior to him, we had a miscarriage and an ectopic pregnancy. So I experienced OB care with my ectopic and was bounced around a lot in a practice and had OBs that were great and equally some OBs that were such a rushed visit that I had an OB miss an infection in my incisions because I like my pain was dismissed and just some like really tough stuff. So when it came to like actually getting our rainbow baby, I was like, I really want to be not in a hospital at all. I want midwives. And that's the route that we went. And then the very brief story of my son is that he flipped breech 44 hours into labor. And that's when we legally had to transfer to the hospital and I had my cesarean. And so in planning my VBAC, I planned to go back to the birth center and was a little devastated when it was just out of our financial means this time. And I was so panicked. I remember texting you, Megan, and being like, what do I do? I can't be at the birth center anymore and I don't want to be at a hospital. And we interviewed another birth center about an hour away that's in network with our insurance. And it just didn't feel, talking about trusting your gut, like it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel warm and fuzzy. That's the feelings I got with our first birth center. I loved them so much and I still do. And then I met with Paige and her practice partner, Jess, and I came in like loaded to the teeth. I was like prepared to fight with someone because that's what I had in my brain and that's what I expected. And I sat down with them. They met me like after hours after clinic, and I sat down with my 3 pages of questions. And by the way, if you're listening and you need questions, we have a great blog on it and some social media posts of the questions that I specifically used. And we talked for over an hour, and every question I asked, they just had the like ultimate answer to. And I felt so at peace after talking with both of them. And I remember telling my husband going into it, I was like, I'm really worried that I'm going to like these people because I don't want to deliver at a hospital. And then I'm going to have to choose like far away birth center that's out of hospital or providers that I like, but it's a hospital. And it just feels like everything has been so serendipitous for us. Our hospital opened a low intervention portion of their birth floor, so I'll still get to have like the birth tub and all the things, but like truly have just been blown away by Paige and have like just buddied up. She's dealt with all my anxiety and pregnancy and in VBAC and in all my questions. And like it just feels like such holistic care compared to my experience with OBs in the past.
That is so amazing. And I was actually going to ask, how has your care been during this pregnancy? And it sounds like it's just been absolutely incredible and exactly what you needed. And I remember you texting me and kind of feeling that, like, oh crap, I don't know what to do. What do I do? And I just think it's so great that you have found Paige. And did you say Jess is your partner?
Yes.
Jess. Yeah, I'm so glad that you found them because it really does sound like you're exactly where you need to be.
Yeah, it made a huge difference for me. And I tell Paige all the time, I truly didn't know that care in a hospital setting could look the way that it does. And I feel like I'm getting, I experienced birth center care. I had an out of hospital experience until we transferred. And I can say with confidence that my care has been the same, if not better, with Paige, and just having the conversations and the good stuff and feeling like really safe and confident. One thing that they pointed out that I thought was great when I went in and asked all my questions is Jess looked at me and she's like, okay, it sounds like you have a lot of anxiety around hospital transfer. And I did with my son. That was my worst fear. And then it came true. And I had a lot of anxious, like, well, what if I have to transfer? And she's like, the thing is when we can practice in the hospital, there's no transferring. We can induce you if you need to be induced, and we can come with you into the OR with your cesarean if that ever happened to be another thing. And for me, that brought a lot of peace to know that, like, no matter what, the provider that I know, the provider that I feel comfortable with is going to be with me. And I, again, didn't expect to feel that way, but it's been a really great reassurance for me personally.
Yeah, I think just have it's the same with doula, right? Knowing that there's someone in your corner that you know that you've established care with that can follow you to your birth with you through your journey. It's just so comforting.
We love our partners over at Needed, and I want to take a little break from the show today and talk about their prenatal vitamins. Did you know that a large majority of the prenatal vitamins out in the internet land, in grocery store or health food stores, are not cutting it when it comes to providing the optimal amounts of nutrients? Studies have shown that 95% of pregnant women are left nutritionally depleted. Crazy, right? Our family here at the VBAC Link wants to help bring awareness to get better nutrients before, during, and after your pregnancy. That is why we highly suggest and love what Needed has to offer. Their prenatal vitamins not only have quality vitamins and minerals, but also the optimal amount, which is one of the biggest things that sets them apart from other brands. Their prenatals include ingredients like vitamin B12. Needed provides 200 mcg, whereas most brands have a dose that is very low. They also have 400 milligrams of choline, 4,000 IUs of vitamin D3, and 900 mcg of methylfoliated form of folate, and minerals bound to glycine for best absorption and digestive comfort. Our cute pregnant team members are loving their prenatal vitamins, and you will too. Check them out at thisisneeded.com to get 20% off with code VBAC20 at checkout. Again, that is VBAC20 at checkout. thisisneeded.com. So, Paige, I wanted to talk about midwifery care and also just lowering the chance of cesarean. Sometimes people do choose midwifery care specifically because they're like, I think I have a lower chance of a cesarean if I go the midwifery route. Can we talk to that a little bit?
Yes, that's true. A lot of people know that there's benefits in midwives, but I think when people think of benefits, they're like, oh, it's just like a better experience. I trusted my team more. And that's definitely there. There have been studies and people felt more at peace and empowered through their birthing journeys with midwives than they did with OBs. It's been studied, but there's also a decrease in C-section risk. So your risk of a C-section drops 30 to 40% when you have a midwife, which I think is a pretty significant drop. Especially when we look in the United States at our birthing outcomes and like maternal mortality and C-section rates, it is way too high for as developed of a country as we are. And I think that's where midwifery care is really stepping in and starting to help lower those rates to get it more down to what it should be. The World Health Organization has been like nominating and promoting midwifery care because it really is the answer to how we get these C-section rates lower and these bad outcomes lowered. Midwives also have lower chance of an operative vaginal birth. So that would be like with forceps or with a vacuum or with an episiotomy. So lower chance of those things as well. Lower chance of preterm birth, which is interesting. And it's probably because one, we do take lower risk people. I think that's, true. But also because we're looking at that holistic, like we're looking at everything. We're not just looking at you as a sick person. I think a lot of people think of pregnancy as an illness, and pregnancy is not an illness. It's just a natural part of life. And we got to look at the whole picture of life if we're just going to look at the one thing too. So I think that helps to reduce preterm birth risk. We also have lower interventions just overall. So we're more in tune with like people's bodies, and we want to honor what their body is meant to do. Labor is supposed to happen naturally. It's not this big medical intervention that occasionally happens naturally. It's this natural process that occasionally needs medical intervention. That midwifery model is so important because I think when you go to traditional medical model, you have to look at the present illness, and so they see pregnancy as an illness. What can go wrong? And don't get me wrong, there's a slew of things that can go wrong in pregnancy, and you do have to watch out for them. But I think when midwifery care, you know when to use your hands, but you also know when to sit on them. So.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. I feel like we used to get quotes from our podcast episodes and turn them into t-shirts, and I feel like that is a t-shirt podcast quote worthy. Like, sir, oh my gosh, worthy quote, I should say. That is amazing, and it's so true though. Like,
Is
and it's not to rag on OBs. You guys, OBs
no.
are amazing. They're wonderful. They do an amazing job. We love them. But there is something different with midwifery care. And so you kind of mentioned preterm birth. I remember when I was going through my interview process to have my VBAC after two C-section baby, and I finally established care mid-pregnancy because I switched. That was one of the things in the very beginning that my midwife was like, let's talk about things. Let's talk about nutrition. Let's talk about supplements. Let's talk about where you're at. And it was just like honing in on that, which I kind of was surprised by that because I figured she'd be like, let's talk about your history. Let's talk about this. But it was like, no, let's talk about what we can do to make sure that you have the healthiest, pregnancy. But then also started commenting on mental stuff. So helped me get healthy in my mind. And I just would never had that experience with an OB where they wanted to learn what I was scared about and what I was feeling and all of those things. So not only was I learning how to nourish myself physically, but mentally. And it was a really big deal. And I do feel like it played a big impact in my labor.
Yeah, a lot of people like discredit how much nutrition and like fear, like debunking fears and stuff like that can go, because I think a lot of that, I mean, if we look at like nutrition wise, like we could probably avoid almost all preeclampsia with nutrition alone, which is incredible. So a lot of people are kind of there. I'm like, I really think you should read Real Food for Pregnancy. And people are like, oh, it's such a big book. And I'm like, but it's so important to know this information about what we should be putting in our bodies. And I think a
I
lot of
want to
people are like, oh,
see.
100 grams of protein, you've already got it.
I want to see how many pages we've got for a real book. It's got, okay, we've got like 300, it's like 300 pages, but it has like recipes and
Recipes,
all of these amazing things in the end. So it's not even like a full book. Like,
yes. And people are like, oh
yes.
man, like I don't know if I want to read the whole thing, but I'm like, it's so important. And I think when people do read it, they come back, they're like, did you know that I could decrease my risk of this if I eat more vitamin A? And I'm like, yes, that's why I wanted you to read this book. It's just got such a good a wealth of information, and I have such healthier pregnancy outcomes when people follow like that high protein diet and looking at micronutrients of their vitamin A, their choline, all those sorts of things.
Yeah, all the things that we talk about a lot here on the podcast because we are partnered with Needed and we love them so much because we talk about the choline and the vitamin A and the vitamin Bs and the vitamin Ds, And then she also, Lily, actually had Lily Nichols, not this Lily on our podcast today. She wrote also Real Food for Gestational Diabetes. So
Yes.
that's another really powerful book as well. But yeah, it's just hard because OBs don't tend to have the time. I think some OBs would actually love the time to sit down and like dig deep into this, but they don't have the time either. And I do think that that's a big difference between OBs and midwives. What is your prenatal, your standard prenatal look like? When a mom comes in, a patient comes in, what do you guys kind of do through a visit?
So we follow the standard kind of what everywhere in America does, like once a month, roughly in the first trimester and second trimester. And then when you hit 28 weeks every 2 weeks, and then when you hit 36 weeks every week, if you go to 41, we'll see you twice in that week. So we follow those stipulations, but our appointments are a little bit longer. So when you're in like a big practice, a lot of times it's driven by RVUs. So the more patients somebody can see, the more they're going to get paid and the bigger their bonuses at the end of the year. So a lot of people tend to feel like they're just like running through the cattle herd and like they've in and out 15 minutes, if that. At my practice, it's a little bit different because we're not RVU based. We're not getting any bonus. We're not trying to see as many patients as we can. Will we ever be like the richest at what we do? No. But that's okay with me and Jess. Like, we're small on purpose and we love to be able to take the time. So, like, Lily's appointments, we always book her at least 30 minutes because we know that me and her like to talk. And there's a lot of time. We've done an hour for some people because we know there's always going to be like that long conversation. Don't get me wrong, though, like, fourth mom who's had three vaginal births and going for her fourth, she may be like a page, there's really nothing to talk about today. And that's okay. So sometimes they're 15 minutes, sometimes they're 30, sometimes they're an hour. Our first appointment is always an hour because there's just so much to dive into with like how we can be preparing ourselves, what does your history look like, especially if they're brand new to our practice and we've never met them before, starting to build that relationship early on. So it just depends on how far along they are, who the person is, and those things. But I do like that I can spend as much time as I need. Sometimes I tell my people bring a book because I tend to get behind because I'll end up talking to people longer than I'm booked for. But that's okay. We know that we can do that because we are a smaller practice. And I think when people are thinking about what kind of care they want, they should probably consider like, how are these people paid? Is it by how many they can see in a day? Because you're probably going to get a different level of care than a practice that's not driven by those RVUs.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I feel like my shortest visit with my midwife was 20 minutes. Like, which to me is pretty dang long, because I think my when I was going with my other two daughters, I think it was probably like 6, 7 minutes, if that, with my provider. I mean, it was like get in, my nurse would like check my fundal height, my nurse, all of that, and then, oh, the doctor will be in here, and then came in, quick out. So yeah, it is really, really different.
I know for me too, like I love that we don't just talk about like nutrition and things like that, but even in my last appointment, I was talking with Paige about like the things that can be triggering coming back into labor and going back into a hospital. So like my ectopic pregnancy was at the hospital that I'll be delivering at, and I had to go into the emergency room. And the way that you go into labor and delivery after hours is through the ER. And so Paige and I were talking, and she's like, well, I can just meet you outside and we'll just badge you in and we'll like avoid the emergency room if that feels triggering. And so it's just like those things that you don't get with an OB necessarily to talk through like tiny little triggers. And they're probably generally less accommodating to those little things of like, well, that's just the standard. Like you're gonna have to get over that and just go through the ED and come on up. And so I think that for me has been really huge. I also have a like dear friend who's going to school to be an OB, and she may possibly, I told Paige at my last appointment, be at my birth because I have such a desire. She's my crunchy friend, so she'll be a great OB. But I have such a desire to be like, come see a VBAC. Like, come see it so that you have it in your brain and you know that they can be safe and like look at what can be done. And so I think that's so huge too, as we like continue to train and uplift our next generation of providers, that like, what does that look like to show them? And her, I think her internship or something is going to be a midwife and OB like partnership practice, which is really cool. But I'm like, yes, come to my birth, please. Like, I want you to see all the things. So that's really cool too. And that Paige is open to like, hey, my friend might be there.
Bring whoever.
I love that. And I love that you're kind of pointing out to this next generation of providers. Like, let's let them see that birth, VBAC, it's actually very normal and very possible, because there's a lot of people that have maybe seen trauma or an unfortunate situation, which could have happened because we blasted them with interventions, or it could have happened out of a fluke thing. You don't know all the time. But I do think if we could keep trying to get these providers, these new providers, to see a different light, we'll also see that cesarean rate drop a little bit. I mean, I always tell people we have a problem. And they're like, it's really not that big of a deal. I'm like, no, it's a very big deal. It's a very, very big deal. We have a problem in this medical world. And I do believe that it needs to change. And midwifery care is definitely going to impact that. And I hope that kind of what you were saying in the beginning, policies don't trump a lot of the midwives. And so I wanted to ask you, this isn't like something we talked about, but is it possible to ask your midwife, like, hey, what policies do you lie under? Like, is that appropriate?
Yes, actually, that was one of my favorite things when Lily came in for her to like meet and greet us kind of thing. She came and she's like, you know, what are the policies for a VBAC? And we kind of dove into that. We've been diving into that. And what are we going to be okay with? And what are we not going to be okay with? And that's kind of the beauty, is that I'm not employed by the larger hospital system I work under. So I feel like a policy is not a law. I feel like there's informed consent, and I think informed consent is so important, but at the same time, there's informed declination, and you should be able to decline anything. And that's true. I mean, we can never force anybody into surgery. We can never force anybody into anything. And I think a lot of people aren't having those conversations where it's actually informed. So then people are like, oh, they're just refusing everything. And I hate the word refuse, because no, they're not refusing it. They're declining it.
Declining it.
They are informed, and they know the risk, and they have all the information at their fingertips, and they know that this is the best decision for them or their baby. And we have to honor that. So that's why I'm really glad that I'm able to practice in that way. But I do know I've worked with people who feel like they are kind of boxed in and have to follow those policies. So we've kind of started to talk about what are our policies with like TOLAX and VBAX and things like that. One of them is they're supposed to have two IVs. I've already gone against that before. And I've had a beautiful unmedicated VBAC. She walked in. I said, we've talked about it. She was also laboring outside when we talked about it. And that's what she didn't want to come in. And I was like, well, you know what? When we get up there, I'm just going to tell them that you know why they recommend two IVs and that you're declining. And so she walked in. She's like, clearly, you know, going to have this baby within the hour. And I told the nurse, I was like, we're not doing the IVs. We've talked about it. We're going to decline them. And that was the end of the discussion. We didn't have to talk about it again, which was nice, because she shouldn't have had to advocate in that moment for herself. We've already had those.
Yes.
Another one is continuous monitoring. And the whole idea is, well, if you start to rupture, then that's how we're going to catch it, is the baby's going to tank. And that's how we're going to save the baby's life. And don't get me wrong, I think continuous monitoring can be really valuable for a lot of things, but it's actually not evidence-based. We have not improved neonatal outcomes with continuous fetal monitoring. So we've kind of talked about that with Lily, and she's going to opt for intermittent auscultation. And I think that's very appropriate, because she plans to go unmedicated. And let's be honest, if you're unmedicated, if your uterus starts to rupture, I have had like moms will tell me like something is not right. This is beyond labor. And I think that like her saying that and being aware of that would like we would notice that a lot sooner than we would the baby tanking kind of thing.
Yeah. And that I do know that with uterine rupture, we can have decelerations. But like you're saying, there's usually so many other signs before baby's actually even struggling. And I know a couple of uterine rupture stories where providers didn't believe the mom that something was going on because that one thing wasn't happening. The baby wasn't struggling. And it's like, you guys. So when it comes to continuous fetal monitoring in the hospital, people, you have to fight to have that intermittent, you know? And so anyway, these policies, they're not law. I love that you said that too. There's another t-shirt quote.
I know. And I think people should start asking, you know, if they're planning a VBAC, like start asking about what is the policy and start thinking about, is that what they want? And I do have some moms who are like, no, I want the two IVs because, you know, I'm hard to get a stick, whatever it may be. They want that backup in case, and that makes them feel more at peace. But other people are like, it makes me feel like a patient. I don't like it. You know what I mean? People don't like needles, and that's okay.
Yeah.
They have that right to say no. And I tell people, in a true emergency, like, we will get an IV in you if something really, really bad were to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of part of training. If somebody walks in off the street, we're not going to be like, oh, when was the last time you ate? Sorry, you can't have a surgery. We know something bad is happening right now. Like, we will get the IV. We will do all the things. So in true emergencies, really, that's not going to save as much time as people act like it will.
Yeah. And there are other things. So say we have our baby and we're having higher blood loss than we'd like, or we've got some concern of, you know, some hemorrhaging. There are other things that we can do. We can put Pitocin in a leg. We can do Cytotec rectally. We
Yes.
can, there are things that we can do. We can get that baby to our breast and start stimulating and try to help that way. I mean, there are things that we can do while we're waiting for an IV, right? Too.
Yes, I remember
So,
that all
yeah.
the time. Most of the postpartum hemorrhage meds that we use can be given without an IV. There's only one that truly has to be given through IV, and that's TXA, but the rest can all be given other routes. And a lot of times those ones work better than IV Pitocin. Sometimes the IM Pitocin works better. Sometimes the IM Methergine works better. So it's not this like, oh, we have to have this just in case kind of thing. Because if there was a just in case moment, like, yes, we can be working on the IV and doing other things. I'm also trying, I mean, I have to be kind of secretive about it, but I have like tinctures and stuff with like Shepherd's purse and yarrow, and those things actually have great evidence. They're really helpful for postpartum blood loss. So I have a lot of moms who are more interested in doing something more, holistic and natural before they try some kind of medication. Cypress essential oil, you can like rub that in and give somebody, like I'll have doulas like use my cypress roller and give a massage while like the patient's like, I'm trying to manage like the hemorrhage, but at least they're doing something, and that cypress oil can help a lot too. So sometimes going back to like our, instinctual old medicine that we had been using well before medicine was like the norm for birth.
Okay, this is a random question for both of you. Lil, I really wonder if you've seen it or heard about this too, because you're so heavily in our DMs. But hey, this is going to be weird. Maybe people are going to be like, what? But, and I did this. I did this because we weren't sure. But we cut the umbilical cord and put it in our mouth. It's really weird. Yes. Paige is like, what?
Literally.
You put it down like in the gum area, like in between your teeth and your cheek, and it sits there. Okay, you guys, I've seen it just a couple times, myself included. Yes, I put my umbilical cord in my mouth. Yes, it's weird.
Okay.
And it felt like a little gummy. It's fine. I wasn't chewing on it, just sitting there. But anyway, it is weird. But with my other client too, we did it, and all of her hemorrhaging, just like all of her symptoms, just like went away.
That's cool.
I know it's really random, but just cut a little piece of that umbilical cord and try to put it in your mouth.
Is so interesting. So, like a piece of the umbilical cord, or like the entire thing once it's clamped and cut, kind of thing, and still attached?
They clamped and cut a piece and put it in my mouth.
I would be so willing to try that. I mean, what harm is there in that? None.
I don't know, but it did diminish the hemorrhaging symptoms. So
Cool.
very interesting, right? Okay, so are midwives restricted on what they can, when it comes to VBAC, on what they can accept? Like Lily, you're a VBAC. I was a VBAC after two C-sections. You can obviously take Lily. Could you accept me?
Yes. Luckily, in midwifery care, at least here in Colorado, there's a lot of gray for certified nurse midwives, so it's
Okay.
not always black or white. So VBACs are okay, but there's no direct say, oh, if you've had this many C-sections, we can't do it. I think that's because ACOG also doesn't. Strangely, they don't have an opinion on that. They actually agree. There's limited evidence on beyond one C-section. My practice has done several VBACs after two cesareans. I don't think we've ever done one for a third or greater than two, probably because I think those people a lot of times don't even consider VBAC, and they just have already been seeing their doctor for their repeat C-section with each pregnancy. But I'd love to see more people going for a VBAC after multiple cesareans, because I think the VBACs after two cesareans are, there's just like a whole different level of like, I don't know, feeling empowered after that. So I think that's really cool. And even like special scars and stuff, there's a really limited evidence on all of these things. And I'd like to see more people kind of pushing the limits a little bit. And especially since I am in a hospital, you know what I mean? I do have an OB hospitalist on call 24/7, like at the disposal of my fingertips if I need them. We're close to an OR. So I think if somebody that fear is there and they're like, I just don't know if it's like more risky because of this, I think it's worth it to try, because the more people who go for it and are successful, the better evidence we're going to get from it.
Yeah, that is exactly what I'm thinking. There's not a lot of evidence after two cesareans because it's just not happening and hasn't really been studied. And a lot of that is because people aren't even given the option,
Yeah. And
right?
I'll have people who, it's their third or fourth C-section, and they were never even given that option. And they were like, oh, well, I was told I have CPD. And I'm like, the chances of you actually having CPD are low. And then you go back and look at their records, and it was like a fetal
There's
distress
Lily over
scan or
there.
something
Me,
like that.
yes.
It's just, yeah, like CPD's so, and I've heard it so many times, that baby was never gonna come out of that pelvis ever. And that breaks my heart every time I hear it, because there's been times I was like, man, I don't know. And then an 8-pound baby comes out. So like, we can't go off of those things, because the body does what it's supposed to in those moments. And don't get me wrong, things do go wrong. And C-sections do happen sometimes. But yeah, to hear like everybody has CPD just because they've had 3 C-sections, like, I don't know, that would be quite a few people, way more than we know are true.
Yeah, we're all walking around with tiny pelvises, like, guys. So it's just
Apparently.
what everyone thinks anyway. Lily, we, being in our DMs, hearing the podcasts, understanding, like seeing just so many of these people and what they say, do you have any advice for them when they're looking for their provider or just any, just in general, do you have any advice from a VBAC prepping mom?
Yeah, I think for me is to go into it open-handed. I think we hear so many horror stories about providers often, and I think that's why I went in to looking for a provider with like both fists up, like ready to fight. And what has surprised me the most is just, like I said earlier, like I didn't know hospital care could look like this. And I remember we even posted something, and I had posted on the VBAC link that like a hospital birth can be equally as beautiful as an out of hospital birth. And there were people arguing and people saying like, no, absolutely, that's not possible. That's not a thing. And gosh, how discouraging if we go into things thinking that like we can't have beautiful outcomes in different settings. And certainly there are areas around our country that need improvement. There's not a low intervention floor at every hospital, and there's not midwives that are doing what Paige is doing everywhere. But I think the more that we seek out that care and look for that care, advocate for that care, the more that we're going to see it. And as much as it sucks that we have to be our advocates, like it's also a really cool opportunity that we pave the way for the VBAC moms and the moms who've never had a C-section, that we're paving the way for care that doesn't end up in a cesarean. So I would just say be open-handed, and yes, you can be prepared to fight, and you can be prepared with your statistics, prepared to ask the why behind questions. But ultimately, I think that care can be so much more than we expected if we go into it thinking like, gosh, well, what can I get out of this, and how can I make these things happen? Like Paige said, we've had lots of conversations around like, well, this is the policy, but a policy is not a law. So like, I'm here to support you in that. And at our last appointment, she was like, hey, make sure you bring your doula to your appointment where we're going to talk about your birth plan, because I want to make sure that she's there, that we all hear each other, we're on the same page. So I think that's helpful too. And then having a doula. My doula was my doula with my C-section. She was with us. She was whoever was on call at the birth center, actually. And I think it was so serendipitous because she's a VBAC mom. So I think I needed her then, and I'm so stoked to have her now that she's just a really special human who I know is also always in my corner and constantly texting her like, oh my gosh, look at the new birth rooms. Oh my gosh, I had this great conversation. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And so I think having your doula there to be a partner in advocacy is really helpful too.
Yes. Okay, that's a good question too when it comes to doulas and midwives. Sometimes I think people think that if I'm hiring a midwife, I don't need a doula. And then we, of course, know that a lot of people just mistake doulas and midwives together. But Paige, how do you feel about doula care and working with doula care? Is it necessary? Do you, how do you guys work together for as doula and midwife?
Yes, I love doulas. I wish everybody had access to a doula, truly, because doulas, just like midwives, have been studied and they have better birthing outcomes, more empowered births, like all the things. So doulas are so important, and doulas and midwives work really closely. I think a doula is there for that constant presence, that constant, you know what I mean, helping with anything, a really good advocate, which I think is important when, especially if you don't have a good relationship with your provider, maybe, or you don't know who you're gonna get. Maybe you've seen 7 different providers and you get who you get when you're in labor. So to have that doula there to just constantly be advocating for you is such an important piece. Yeah, I would really wish everybody could have access to a doula, because it just makes a world of difference. And I can't think of like any bad outcomes I've ever had when a doula was present. It's just a different level of care. And usually people who have sought out a doula have also taken the time to like seek out and do all the things that, you know what I mean, are going to make a healthier pregnancy and a better birthing outcome. That's why I think everybody deserves doula care, is because it does lead to better outcomes. And midwives are always known to work closely with doulas and really support them. And it's a team effort.
We love our relationships with our midwives here. It's really great to just know how we work and know how we need to support the client. And it is sometimes hard when we go to a hospital and we don't know who we're getting. And sometimes that OB or that midwife we've worked with before, and then sometimes it's a whole new face. And so it does bring us comfort to know that the client, the family knows us and we know them, and then we can all work together. So I love that. Okay, do either of you guys have anything else that you would like to say to our beautiful VBAC community before we go?
I don't think so. Yeah, thank you
Okay.
so much for having me. Yeah, this was wonderful. And I just hope that everybody who's thinking about a VBAC really like does their research and looks for the best provider and really finds that perfect fit, because there are so many good providers out there, OBs, midwives, professional midwives, all the things.
I agree. And it's okay to interview multiple people. It's also okay that if mid-pregnancy, end of pregnancy, whenever during, even in labor, really, even in labor, if something's not feeling right, you can request a different provider, or you can go out and start interviewing again and find that provider that's right for you. Well,
Yes.
thank you, Paige and Lily, for joining us today. And thank you so much for doing so much for your community. I really love your setup and hope that we can kind of see that type of setup happening around the US, because it really is, it kind of just feels perfect in a
Yeah,
lot
I
of
love
ways.
it.
Yeah, yes, I'm loving it. Okay, ladies, well, thank you so much.
Thank
Yeah,
you.
thanks, Megan.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.